Welcome everybody to episode 170 of the Lookout Podcast. I am Meals. I am here with LJ himself. LJ, how are we feeling today? Loaded question.
I know, right? It is a very loaded question.
I feel the exact same way every time that, I don't know if there's any overlap between this show and A Show. I'm sure there is. But every time Justin asks me, like, how you doing? I'm like,
It's like, how real do I get on this podcast?
Yeah, really.
No, I mean, I'm doing okay. Obviously, we are still suffering from a heavy loss.
Right.
This week. So yeah. that definitely was a gut punch for the weekend for sure.
It's kind of tough. Like, it's something. So if you don't know what we're referencing, you've been under a rock. That's kind of crazy. But this past week it was announced that creator of Dragon Ball and other amazing stories, you know, Akira Toriyama passed away, age 68. Actually passed away on March 1st. It was revealed to us, the public, on March 8th.
He hit the MF Doom on us, didn't he?
I think we're so used to, especially with like the Kobe situation and everything like that, we're so used to like someone passes, we know within minutes, we know within hours, we know in a pretty short time. But for this to kind of like, he was dealing with something private, he was experiencing something, and his family got to like grieve and do all these things with him and all that with the privacy of themselves without it being a major spectacle, which it could have been. I mean, literally, if it's announced almost immediately, that the Toriyama family probably has to like figure out how they're going to maneuver around this. But, you know, since it was announced in the way they announced, they're able to like kind of grieve, hold services, all this other stuff like that. So definitely big, but man, this is a major loss for the anime community. Like, Akira Toriyama was maybe the first mangaka that I've ever known.
Ever. Yeah, for sure. Like, I think, like, that is... Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball were essentially the gateway drug.
Right.
It's for, like, for everyone into anime. Like, it had transcended what we thought anime was and became such a staple in just pop culture and entertainment that, once again, it's just one of those rare things where it extended past its medium.
Right.
And to lose such a giant, to lose someone who was so influential that literally you can reference so many things back to this one, you know, back to this one piece of work and all the children and all the things that have extended from it. I don't think there is anything that we'll see like that ever again.
Absolutely. No, it's a, like, just to be creating a work in itself that many people are able to kind of, indulge in, celebrate, take part in, build memories off of, build communities off of, build podcasts off of, right? Like, all these experiences that they have, and to be able to do that is like the true mark and probably the greatest fulfillment, greatest moment that a creator can actually have. Like, something that you created that means something, that's heavy, that's worth something, and that means a lot to a lot of people. And I look at it from the side of creative. I look at it from the side of a human. I look at it. I'm in Justin such, and I think most of the anime community as well, and not even just the anime community, but his fellow peers in the space, the mangakas that have all grown up under him and have been influenced by him, have all shared their thoughts about his passing. And it's just a major loss to the community. It's something that with Dragon Ball, oh man, like, I mean, there's no The Lookout without Akira Toriyama. Like, that's what it kind of like it boils down to me with just the effect that they have, the effect that we have. There's no, a lot of these moments, a lot of these crossover moments to us even getting into anime, doesn't happen without Akira Toriyama. So it's a lot to process. It's a lot to deal with. But it's, I'll say this, and I'm sure, I think we'll talk about this kind of like, we'll go on a longer form kind of like discussion about this a little bit. Not later in the episode, but on another occasion, considering I legitimately thought, I was like, should we take a break from Full Metal Alchemist? But we're so deep into it.
Yeah, I mean, everything that we have in
my brain is so like focused on Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, with the information overload we just got from these last batch of episodes, it would do us a disservice. But no, for real though, it's just one of, like, once again, it's one of those like world stopping losses where you're kind of just like, whoa, like what the, you know. Once again, we just lost this giant, this pioneer in this art form that is now, you know, when you look where anime is now, it, once again, it just all stemmed, like Dragon Ball Z just has literally it stems from that, the popularity of Dragon Ball Z and how it just opened the fucking doors for everything to come after.
Right.
And once again, I think it just as an artist, I don't think you ever create anything in a way where you just kind of like, I truly don't think Akira created Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z and create these characters in the mindset of like, oh, one day this thing is going to change the world. I'm pretty sure he just created out the love of the game, but right, to create something like that and really see it grow into that is it like, probably mind-boggling, like how many artists would just, you know, would do anything to have that level of impact, and for him to have it, and like you said, to, you know, you're reading the, you know, his peers' statements about him, and all of them have nothing to say but just beautiful things about the type of person that he was, and just how much he supported them, and how much he just pushed the next generation that came, you know, after him, and the ones that continue to come after them, and so it's, once again, we have lost a complete giant in this industry, in this medium, and it's, you know, it's sad. It's just really sad. Like one of those things where you're like, you know, this, the you know, Akira had grown to this level of like this level for me where I'm like, he can never die. Like, you know, like you think about, you're like, he's gonna live forever.
Even still, right? Like it lives on through Dragon.
Yeah. So, like, he's gonna live forever, like in my eyes, and just because of what he, you know, and all that he's done. So for the mortal man to actually be gone though is really crazy to think about.
It's his work has extended over the last like 35 to 40 years. And I guess his last bit of work that he's worked on, which will be in anime form, is Dragon Ball Daima, that's coming out later this year, so it'll be interesting to see how that kind of turns out. But it'll be more interesting. I mean, from here moving forward, right, there's, especially when you think about the manga, when you think about the stories that'll be told, the movies that are going to be created, all this other stuff, it won't have Toriyama's direct input in it, but I know, I mean, based on Toyotaro and kind of like everyone, it'll have his direct inspiration from it, because the thing about these mangakas is they're kind of like Loki and Enigma. They're not celebrities. And you'd think they would be, considering how popular manga is kind of over on the other side. There are very few who are very public-facing and stuff like that. But most are kind of like, kind of stick to the work and get it done. And kind of like, you learn through their personalities from the little comments they leave in Weekly Shonen Jump. Or kind of like how they write their stories. Or the little pieces of interviews that you can kind of like grab onto. And that's kind of been how people have really become accustomed to Akira Toriyama over the last like 40 years or so. So it'll be interesting to see how Dragon Ball moves forward. It'll be interesting to see kind of like how the world moves forward. It was a major loss. I'm glad the world treated it as such. It was this cultural watershed moment. Dragon Ball coming to the United States and becoming an international phenomenon. Shout out to that person on Twitter who was like, I got shot at 15. I wasn't out, you know, I was outside not watching anime. And I was like, damn, I would rather watch Dragon Ball Z than get shot. I'm just like,
shout out to the person that responded to him with the Trunks getting shot in the chest picture. It was like, this was you. Oh man,
it's a lot. And even still to this day, right? Like, you're approaching 30. I'm past 30. But we're still here inside watching anime to this day. And
a it's lot of great. That, it's amazing, yeah. Man. But like, once again, like, Dragon Ball Z was the gateway. That was the gateway drug for us. We're just like, yo, what? I need more of this. Like, what, right. Where can I find more of this from?
Absolutely. So I think we'll do like a proper tribute, proper Dragon Ball kind of like situation. I know Subzilla, Dubzilla will have something as well coming up pretty soon. Their return is imminent. We have not announced a date yet, but I'm sure it'll be soon. But they'll be back, and I'm more than sure that D&J will also go over something as well. But, you know, we're here. We're continuing to trek through Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Again, as much as like this is like grand stakes, like, we couldn't put this down. This is such a good story. And where did we end off last time? We ended off episode 30 with
where we learned about the Ishvalan War, and we kind of get all the backstory of like, okay, this is what cracked off, this is what happened.
And I thought Marco was dead, but apparently he's not. It was a dummy.
Yeah.
This is like how, I mean, I've watched this once and I didn't retain that much information because, again, this anime, it's an information overload. There's a lot of moving parts, things that happen.
Oh, and especially in these last few episodes.
Yeah, and things are not like clearly defined. They're not clearly broken up by arcs and stuff like that where you can kind of reference, oh, this happened in this arc or this happened in this arc. It's like, no, it's just one continuous story. So I legit thought Dr. Marco was dead, and I was like, oh, it was a dummy. Okay. How do we feel about Scar disfiguring Dr. Marco? Like, just off the strength for
it seemed very painful and very relieving for Scar.
That's what I imagine.
He found some enjoyment doing that, but when you kind of figured out like why he did that, I was like, oh, you know, Scar's a smart guy.
I mean, for them not to recognize him, yeah, I'm probably going to recognize him still. It's not that he's completely, I mean, he uglier. That's the thing. Like, he's definitely uglier, but it's not like I'm not going to know that nigga's Dr. Marco. Just look for the guy running with Scar. I don't know what to say. Like, it's a...
Yeah, he made himself hot about who he aligned himself with.
Right.
I had a friend growing up that... He was on his Scar shit where I was like, you got
what do you beef. Mean Scar shit? What's Scar shit?
Where he had beef with so many sides that I was like, although you are my friend and we have been good friends since I was a child, this is now becoming a liability because of how many people are now looking for you. That's what Marco's situation is. He's like, I kind of got thrown into this liability situation because of this guy that everyone's looking for.
We learn in the, and let me, this is the most episodes we've ever covered. It is a lot of information, so I'm going to try to like parse this in a very sensible way, but I can't promise you that it's all going to end up being like hunky dory, figure it out. But the mission now is they have to find Mei Chang because she knows alchemy, and they're like, maybe alchemy could help us learn about alchemy and all this other stuff like that. And they also have to find Scar's brother's notes. So Mei Chang and Scar and Dr. Marco are kind of like all on the same page. Meanwhile, Sulf J. Kimblee himself, the mass murderer, the psycho, the guy who was imprisoned but somehow not murdered for killing other state alchemists. And we know that he wasn't murdered because of, you know, corruption. The Sideshow Bob with his shit.
The big man on campus.
Yeah, he is released because of Envy. He is released from jail. Envy's like driving the car. I was like, this is weird. I didn't know homunculi can drive, but whatever. And he has
had a pretty solid driver too, you know. This is two hands on the wheel, too, and you know.
Yeah, he did his thing. He has one mission, and that's to capture Dr. Marco and to kill Scar. And he is given another Philosopher's Stone in order to accomplish both. And we're kind of like off to the races with this. We got the Elric brothers trying to find Mei Chang, the Dr. Marco gang with Scar and them trying to find the book so they can kind of figure out how to deal with this from there. And we have Kimberly, who's like, all right, let's find these people to murder. So it's kind of like this weird circle kind of thing of like, okay, they're all intertwined with one another. Nonetheless, let's see. Where do I go from here? There's a couple of different storylines that end up like evolving in this ordeal. One of them is, I mean, we don't get much of Roy Mustang in these episodes, but we do. When we do, I think it's information that continues to build from his end. He's not in his big renegade mode in these
episodes. Because right now they're playing the game with their hands tied right now.
Right.
So, you know, you see a lot of Mustang doing what he can within, you know, the restrictions, and also to like seeing what he's doing, how he's relaying information, how he's getting information, how he's creating these allies between other generals and other people within the military. You kind of start getting a deeper respect for him in terms of not like, you know, I think that sometimes we get caught up in a person's ability to like fight in all these big battles and what can they do in the heat of battle, right. In terms of their how much they help their team, but like to see him really be behind the scenes and get that behind the scenes look of him like, you know, meeting with all these people, once again relaying this information, trying to figure out a way to overthrow King Bradley, and all doing this while under high surveillance, you're kind of like, oh, like Mustang's a different breed.
He meets up with Lieutenant Grumman, who is dressed like an old lady, and which is hilarious. But he tells the story, Lieutenant Grumman tells the story about how Raven, Commander Raven, or General, or Lieutenant, or whatever, they're all names, Raven tried to pretty much offer him a position in the Mortal Clique. You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to join Immortality? I feel like that's their rap name. Like, that's a... Immortality is like a great 90s rap group name.
Then, like, M is spelled like E-M.
Yeah, something like that, you know? Like... Think affirmative action, but homunculi.
Yeah.
But
the firm, but you know.
Right. The firm. What I'm saying. I'm thinking of the track affirmative action.
Who's Nas?
It's gotta be Bradley, right?
Pride is AZ.
Yeah. Keep going.
Greed is Foxy Brown. Lust is Foxy Brown.
And then, oh God, who am I? I want to make sure. Hold on, I'm gonna make sure that I have everyone in the seven things. Just they all there. We got Cormega and Nature. Let's see. I think Cormega. Who would be Cormega? Probably like Greed.
Yeah, because Cormega was ousted from the group, and Nature came in to replace Cormega. So,
and then so when you say Nature is like what, like Jing? Like what the fuck? Like what is he? No,
Nature. Nature gotta be Nature can be Gluttony.
A couple of them are brain dead. Maybe he's like, I don't know. Maybe he's like Pride or something. I don't know. Yeah, someone's got to be Pride. Someone's got to be Pride. Because a couple of these homunculi are like brain dead.
Yeah, for sure.
With that said, Roy Mustang, they tell him the story of how he tried to get him in the Immortal Clique. And then once he pretty much turned it down, he was sent to the dead end of the East afterwards. And he says he won't openly conspire with them, but he'll help them as much as he can. They find out that Mei Chang is heading to the North area. So the Elric brothers, like, we're also going to head to the North area, to the Northern Wall of Briggs. in this moment, we also see Ed and Al meet King Bradley's family, and he's like, oh, damn, they have no idea that this man is, like, a fucking lunatic and a homunculi, and it's all hunky-dory. Little did we know, you know, we'll get to the reveal of Salim, but,
That reveal was so hard, though. The reveal was tight, because, yeah, just because how you're like, oh, I think with all the other ones, you know, like with all the other ones, obviously they're threats.
See them, right. Go ahead.
They're obviously they're threats, but like this one, you're kind of like, oh, this like little motherfucker is here to kill. Like this one is really here for business, huh? Like it's on the same level of King Bradley in terms of menacing.
He is all right. So Pride, first of all, I like Pride reveal with Hawkeye, Lieutenant Hawkeye. I like the reveal of like she's just walking alone and then Pride is like behind her and is like, don't you fucking tell anybody that I'm Pride. Or essentially like just kind of revealing that they're Pride, and then we learn so much about Pride all after the fact. But I like that reveal. I found it incredibly hilarious how that note was given to Roy Mustang himself. The whole like, you know, saying different officers' names and then kind of spelling out Salim Bradley as a homunculi. I'm like, think of how long that is. Think of let's sit here and try to like use code with rappers' names to spell out Salim Bradley is a homunculi. Like, where do you even begin? Like, what's a rapper name that starts with S?
A rapper name that starts with S.
Good lord.
Sexy Red.
Sexy Red.
Schoolboy Q.
Schoolboy Q, then E, Eminem, L.
Oh, you're going through L.
We're spelling Salim Bradley as a homunculi with rapper names. Yes.
L, Lil Baby.
I
20.
Ooh, okay.
M. Meek Mill.
Okay. B.
B.
Was it rapper that starts with B?
Oh my god. Boss Man D-Lo.
There you go. I know people are screaming it out on the other side of this shit.
Yeah, they're like, no. R. Rod Wave.
Okay. A.
Is there a rapper within the list? A Boogie with the Hoodie.
Hey, there you go. D.
D. Drake. Come on.
L.
L. LL Cool J.
E.
E. Eminem.
Y.
Young Thug.
Okay. I was going to say Yellow Wolf. Lou Bradley. All right. I. Another I. What's another I rapper?
Another I rapper?
Is it Mortal Technique?
Ice Spice.
Oh, there we go. Ice Spice. Look at that. S.
S. Ooh. What's another rapper? S.
Oh my god.
Are there many rappers with the name with the really? I know someone, I know people who are listening to this, they're like probably ringing them off.
I gotta look at it. I mean, we did Schoolboy Q.
Okay. So, Schoolboy Q again.
Okay, let's do Schoolboy Q again. A.
A.
Does AZ count as A?
ASAP Rocky. AZ Rocky. ASAP Rocky.
ASAP Rocky. H.
H. Honcho.
Honcho. Come on.
I don't know. Who's a rapper that starts with H? Who's a rapper that starts with H?
That's a good question. Let me look this shit up right now.
rappers with H.
Rappers that start with H. You know, I'll give you Huncho for Huncho Jack. How about that?
Hoodrich Pablo Juan. There you go.
There you go. All right. Oh.
Oh?
Is that rappers that start with O? Is that like based?
Does Ozuna count?
Does Ozuna count?
I don't know. Is Ozuna a rapper? Are we counting him as a rapper? Old Dirty Bastard. Old OJ the Juice Bastard. Man.
Okay. Hey, hold on to that one because we got other O's coming up. M.
M. Dang, another M.
Like Supreme.
Yeah, I was going to say Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay. O again.
Obi Trice.
Okay. Ooh, okay. N.
N. This is fun. Nicki Minaj.
There you go. C.
C. Cardi B.
Okay. U. This is a tough one.
This is a tough one.
What's the rapper name that starts with U? Oh my god. Uncle Cracker?
Uzi Vert?
I'm gonna go with Uncle Cracker.
Okay, why not? It's he could have went U God. Uncle Murder.
Oh, Uncle Murder. There you go. Uncle Murder. L.
Lil Wayne.
Okay. And I again.
I. One more I. What's another rapper with I?
I'm trying to find one myself. Rapper that starts with I. Oh, I see a couple. There's a couple ways you can go.
Ice. Back. Oh, Ice Cube.
Ice Cube. Okay, let's do that. Listen, we did it. We did it.
We did it.
Celine Bradley is a monk, and I'm here, and I'm like, oh my god, yes. Oh, his playlist is banging. Oh shit, Celine Bradley's a monkey lie. I feel like this fire playlist. But we learn that way, and we learn Celine Bradley's a monkey lie, and we kind of like that's kind of where we leave that whole kind of like storyline situation as we end up here. We learn a little bit backstory about Pride. We actually see Pride later on in the episode. We will talk about that as we talk about Van Hohenheim himself. But let's travel to the northern wall of Briggs. But before we get there, Scar and Mei Chang are being followed. They'll be followed by Kim Lee, who is like out to get them for show and out to like blow up train things and all this other stuff like that. But because Kim Lee has not fought in quite some time because he's been, you know, in jail, which I'm not sure if that's how that works. Like, I guess you can be imprisoned and lose ability to fight, but I would feel like prison would also sharpen your fighting abilities.
Well, to be fair, he was on 24-hour lockdown with no contact, and he had no yard time. So it's not like he could really have been
out
there.
Shadow boxing or something? You're not like...
And they also had his hands sealed. He couldn't remember because if he put his hands together, he would have been able to...
I guess. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
He was put in a bad position.
He had no hands. So he ends up getting beat up by Scar, but he does, you know... He ain't beat the case, but he make the race. You know what I'm saying? he got out of there really, really quickly. But they're still all headed toward the north. And he ends up in a hospital at the foot of the northern wall of Briggs. And he eventually is folded into the storyline. And Scar also heads to that area as well. And I know Dr. Marco and Mei Chang end up reaching there before he does. But let's talk about the northern wall of Briggs. How do you feel about this new region? It's really feeling very Pokemon to me.
You know what, shout out to Minnesota.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Shout out to the north, shout out to Canada and my Canadian brothers. Yeah, that's all that Briggs is just St. Paul.
That's hilarious. We meet Commander Olivier Armstrong.
Shout out to Maddie.
Let me just say this right now. Yes, completely a baddie. Might be my favorite character in this show. Might be. Thus far, might be.
I'm not mad at that.
I don't think there's anyone who has, like, just been like, I don't know, not like different, but like, you clearly got the evil people, you clearly got the heroes and people are trying to do good, and she's just like hard ass, you know, badass woman, who's just like, looks good, single, can't get no man because she's wild aggressive. It's very New York to me. Like, that's what it feels like. She's like very New York.
Yeah, for sure.
She can't get a man because she's too busy like running the army, and but she's cool. She's cool. She still does the thing. She has some great moments throughout the rest of the series. It continues the storyline of these strong women that are represented throughout the show. Olivier is, yeah, she's godsend. She is at the Northern Mall of Briggs. They pull up to Briggs and they, you know, Ed and Al get captured despite the hey, I have a letter from your brother who says I'm cool. He's like, I don't give a fuck about my brother. Fuck out of here. So they meet, they get interrogated, but they can't say anything. They're prompted not to say anything. They're under the thumb. You can't just give up information all suddenly. People could be killed. Winry could be killed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's cool to see them having a see, and this also too shows the difference in like maturity levels. And mm-hmm. I think these last few episodes really show that Ed and Al are still children, because they have this. First, they have this very oddly optimistic, like, we don't have to kill, like, we don't have to do it like this, like, yeah. View. And, you know, they're around all these grisly vets of, like, this isn't what military and war is all about.
It's not what Briggs is about.
Yeah, it's not what Briggs is about. This is not what we're about up here. Like, listen, we are the North. Like, we got this blistering cold weather that makes you, you know, heartless and mean because... If you ever felt negative degree weather hit your bones, it instantly makes you mad at the world. Yeah. You know, Saint and Paul. This, yes, sweet old St. Paul, love my city. It makes you, it gives you this angst that is unmatched. But no, like you see but you see how though they have to navigate these situations differently, because I think that even if you put a guy like Mustang in their same position, he's handling that situation much differently. Like he's going to find a way to relay that information in a way that doesn't get, you know, collateral damage or other people caught up in it. You know, like even how him and Hawkeye are able to communicate with each other and have these secret things, like they have things in place already that makes passing messages along easier amongst each other. Like Ed and Al don't really have that, nor have established that type of system with themselves. So you see how they have to handle this situation completely different and kind of create a, you know, not a great first impression. I think that she fucked with them off of the simple fact that she's like, okay, these kids are, you know, are got some special, you know, talents to them. But I think like the fact that he has to hide so much and doesn't know how to relate that makes communicating much harder between them.
Right.
And you will see that too, as the longer they stay in Briggs and all the shit that pops off, longer they stay in Briggs.
Right. Also, they have this like level of conviction towards still maintaining that secret and also trying to save their friends, but also very clear, like we're on this journey. We're trying to change our bodies back. Like it's a level of conviction. I think that they all respect there. I know Major Miles, the Ishvalan, you know, major of the state alchemist troop also respects them for like, I love their conviction. I wish I could do some shit like that, but nah, I can't. It's not my job. I'm an adult. A homunculi comes visit them called Sloth, and they cannot kill Sloth. Sloth is pretty tough until they eventually kick him off the side of a mountain, incorporate him with some like, they use some bullet on him that makes everything freeze faster and freeze more. So he eventually gets frozen, not necessarily to death, but like frozen to be immobilized. And once they reveal the tunnel, because Sloth is the one who's been thinging this tunnel. And it's interesting. I guess it's all happening. I'm not sure if it was all coincidence that the Elric brothers are heading here just as Sloth also ends up here. Because he's making the tunnel essentially, and we learned the tunnel is part of this big like transmutation circle that goes throughout the different parts of Amestris. But as they go through the tunnel to kind of look through the tunnel, Olivier is like, all right, cut the shit. Like, no one's here. Tell me about your entire thing. And they tell her and they inform her. It's like, yo, King Bradley's a homunculi. The entire state of alchemists is this, this, that, and the third, and all this other stuff. And you could potentially be in danger as well. And your troops could also be in danger as well. And just as that happens, who walks in? None other than Kimley himself. Kimley, who came from the hospital, recovered from all his wounds. And he offers, you know, he's out here looking for Scar because he's like, I need some assistance with helping Scar, but I'm the one who needs to kill Scar. Kimley's very like low key, subtly, very aggro, very like, especially to Major Miles. You get the tinge of like racism.
You know, oh yeah, for sure.
You get the thing of like, this nigga don't really fuck with you. Like, and you gotta work for him. And then General Raven shows up as well, because this is one of the rare. I think it's interesting once the once it's all revealed about who everyone kind of is. That's when King Bradley, because normally in this situation, it's King Bradley who shows up and is like,
"Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't pull up.
Maybe it's too far. Maybe it's too cold. Maybe he doesn't want." He doesn't trust the Mustang and Hawkeye not to do something crazy if he's gone. So they sent General Raven. General Raven was also part of this. They inspect the hole. And it's told that in creating this massive philosopher's stone with the transmutation circle, Ford Briggs is next. Commander Armstrong feigns that she doesn't know anything. And Commander Raven... General Raven shows up and asks him, like, yo, you trying to be immortal, gang?
Like, what you trying to do? He was man, really intrigued.
He was trying to riz her up, but like
he really was. He got the horny killed him.
He was like, so you trying to be gang? Like, you know, you don't have to worry about this anymore. Like, I like the cut of your jib. I like the way you swing your sword. I like the all this other like, stuff. Man, like that.
Listen, he was talking to her like how niggas be talking to strippers. He's like, you know, you ain't got to do this no more. I can let you out this life. Listen, you ain't got to do this.
Oh my God. So, she states that she will get a seat at Central Command. Armstrong angrily responds by stabbing Raven through her left arm with her sword, and then Armstrong eventually kills Raven itself. How did you feel about this situation?
You're talking about with her taking out Raven?
Yeah, how did you feel like?
Oh, okay. That's all. I was just trying to clarify the. She's ruthless. God damn, what a way to go out.
Yeah, I think it's.
She hit him with the goddamn. What Han Solo had to get in Star Wars? Just how you just gonna put a man in cement?
It was dope, but also risky, right? Like you're essentially killing one of these people involved in this inner circle. Clearly. And
also not just anybody involved with this inner circle, like a high ranking officer that isn't coming back from visiting your like, you know, that come like all signs point to you did something to this person. And especially with the amount of distrust that's already happening in the military, like this was definitely a risky move that we find out she's able to finesse.
That's what I like about her. She's able to finesse the situation. She's able, you know, figure herself out. She kicks him into the cement thing. He gets buried in cement, which is nuts. Like, this is what a way to go. Gets stabbed and then gets buried with cement. She throws off her gloves. She's like, she got some new gloves and stuff like that. Everyone's like, damn, proud of my boss. She killed a guy. Ed and Al are now being fake held in prison. I mean, I don't know if it's still fake, but they're in prison nonetheless. And Kimley visits them and he says that he brought someone who can help them. And it's Winry. and they're like, win rate? What the hell? Like, what are you doing here? I guess, yeah. It's like that. I don't know if you've ever seen that thing. Or, Ariana, what are you doing here? It's like one of those things.
Yeah.
Winry does not know that she's a whole pawn in all of this. But Ed does.
Yeah, got him a good dummy, don't he?
Yeah, but here's my thing as well. I expected the homunculi to also be like a little bit more all-knowing of things. Like, it's incredibly easy to trick a homunculi. It's like,
oh yeah, they're not smart. They're not smart at all.
But also, it's like they don't have. There's not like any power of like you can't whisper around them because they might find it. You can whisper around them. You can plot around them. You can come up with schemes around them. I mean, we see it throughout the rest of this thing of they come up with a general scheme in order to like kind of subdue everyone. It's like, I don't know. These are homunculi. They're not all as cracked up to be, but here we are. Let's see. Where do we go from here? They're looking to find Scar. So they sent out a search party and crew includes Ed, Al, and Kimberly. Also, Winry decides to jump on as well because she's like, just in case you repaired Ed. Ed gets lighter auto mail, gets the, you know, I guess the quality of life upgrade and makes him faster. And
yeah, nah, it's tight. It's cool too how like. With the automail thing, one of my favorite aspects of this whole show, how they're able to like personalize it and how they're able to kind of make it their own thing. So it was cool seeing even when we geek out like, oh my gosh, you got this, is this, that's diamond crusted. And you know, you had the, what is it called? The alligator, the gator mouth one. And you know, even there, I'm asking Ed, like, why don't you get any of this? And Ed's like, man, that's not my style. Like, yeah. I don't be rocking with that stuff like that.
So we talked about all the Salim and the homunculi thing. They end up searching for Scar, and Major Miles reports to Kimberly that Scar is likely hiding in the abandoned mining town, Bastrul. So everyone gets an organized teams, they look to find Scar. May finds that Elric's and believes they seek her out for love rather than knowledge of Algastri. She couldn't be more wrong. They want your thoughts, not your love, little girl. Dr. Marco also appears in Yoki. Is it Yokai or Yoki? The nigga they don't care about. It was just like
Yoki. I saw him Yoki.
Yeah, and Yoki dislikes Alrix, but what are you gonna do? He's got nothing. He's got no skin in this thing. Scar eventually comes off against. He eventually gets found by two soldiers who end up being chimeras. Alrix show up. They also beat up the monsters and they incapacitate Scar and eventually like hold him down. And it's this big hole.
Oh yeah. Shout out to the Bebop and Rocksteady reference.
That was cool.
That was cool. I saw it. I was like, oh man, they rock it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. See, I knew these are cool people.
So they incapacitate Scar. It leads to this big explosion that eventually happened. There's so much stuff that happens.
I know.
Ed emerges from the building. Scar has been taken. Abinri has been taken hostage by Scar. But the entire situation is fake because they had this whole like plan from the beginning. And they had this whole confrontation and like, oh, you killed my thing. I don't even want to be like with you. But they're like, oh, we need him to, you know.
Winry being the one though of being like, nah, we need to use this.
Yeah, we need a better plan. We can't continue fighting each other because then they're just going to take us out one by one. So we need to join forces. And eventually Scar deals with all the like guilt from like killing Winry's parents. He's like, damn, I shouldn't have done that.
Really, he's like, I bugged out. I'm sorry. He's
bugging out. Yeah. But you know,
he was like, listen, man, I was on this 3-day bender. You know how things get.
This is
like when the Muslims and the Christians link up to protest together. Oh, this feels like.
So the plan goes, just as how it's supposed to go. Miles receives danger of an emergency at Fort Briggs. Alphonse warns Marco of the group of danger because they said they've been taken over by Central. Olivia Armstrong meets a Fuhrer Bradley. She shows
once up again. Central. Big finesse. The big finesse happens.
This can't. It can't be that long to get to Central with the way people are flying across this damn city.
That's what I'm saying. They got a great train system.
It looked like she got there later that evening. Like
that's what I'm saying.
Damn, y'all ain't got that great technology. Y'all ain't got the bullet train. I'm pretty sure it took hours, but hey, what are you gonna do? Same episode.
They got way better. They got a better train system than y'all. They way Bradley, better than MTA, bro.
King Bradley, way better. King Bradley is like, so you killed General Raven? Like for what? Like you know what that can mean, right? And she was like, General Raven could not keep his mouth shut. He was out there blabbing to me, without any prompt, invited me to your immortal clique and told me all about your secrets and stuff like that. Like, he was a creep. Like, you didn't need him. You need a me. You know what I'm saying? You need a me.
So you need a boss on this. He was just like, all that pillow talking, all that, you know.
Who knows who else he could have told about this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know.
And King Bradley's like...
A little hussy got him acting crazy.
Right. And King Bradley's like, so you want to become gang? And she's like, hey, listen.
It is what it is, partner.
Yeah, here we go. Father prepares for the next phase of his plans. It includes a selection of potential human sacrifices. He names Edward Elric, Von Hohenheim, and maybe Azumi Curtis. But he remarks that he still needs one more to fit this like big transmutation circle. Then we get to the Von Hohenheim flashbacks a little bit. Let's talk about this little story, this little backstory as well.
Now this is where shit get cracking. I like, this is such a cold backstory because even then, remember when they were even figuring out, like when they were figuring out all these attacks and pretty much figuring out that the whole country is just one big transmutation circle, and they're going back in time and thinking about, okay, like what were these like big bloody murderous massacres that happened throughout history,
right?
Because it gave you a concept too of like the time period that they're in now,
right?
Where they're like, okay, this happened in 1777, but this happened in 1806. And then this, and so it's like, it also puts you in a space of like, damn, like they've been plotting for this for a minute. And then when you go back to Hohenheim's story and you see that this motherfucker been alive since damn near the dawn of time.
His curse is that he's immortal, which is, it's a burden that he's choosing to take on. I mean, you see, before we see the father kind of flashback, we see the Von Hohenheim one where he's not necessarily happy with kind of like how his life is, especially like he feels guilty. He also feels a sense of like, he feels like he's a monster in a sense for his immortality because he's watching all these people. He's experienced a lot of death in his life and and it's made him not want to get close to anyone. And he finds someone he wants to get close with. It ends up being the Elric's boy's mother, marries her, has children and has to watch all of them age, but he's the one who's never going to age because he's immortal, which is, I'm not sure if that's how immortality works, but whatever. I'll never be immortal, so it is what it is.
I hope everybody finds a Trish in their life.
There you go. How about that? Hold you down. And she,
Trish
she,
held it now.
She's like, listen, we'll find a way to die together. Don't worry. Like, we'll find a way to croak at the same time. Don't you worry. Just be here for your family and all this other stuff. And he's just very happy that he's got someone in his life. But ultimately, he's like, I gotta go. And that's when he pretty much bails on his family because he felt like, he was like, I have to find, similar to how the Elric brothers are going on their journey to get their bodies back and get everyone kind of back. He's on his own journey to figure out how he can remove the burden of this immortality against him. And then later in the little bit of episodes, we see a father flashback where we see the little black thing and the little thing,
the first homunculus.
Yeah. And he's just there, and he just seems like a bad vibes. But Van Hohenheim is just rolling with him, and eventually he reaches up to, he gets to the king, and he's like, King, I have a way for you to make you immortal, but you gotta do this, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. And they all buy into the plan, and eventually everyone in the country is killed, including the king, except Van Hohenheim and a little homunculi in the flask. And that is the birth of Father, once they create this transmutation circle. And it's essentially what's going to happen to Amestris, which is why that little prelude of what happened. And it's why you see the reason why it's Van Hohenheim told Grandma Rockbell, is like, something bad about to happen, I think you should leave. And the reason why he's just very cold about all these situations, why he's not very, he's sad, but also he's not trying to get attached to anything as well.
Van Hohenheim had many sons. Many sons had Van Hohenheim.
So Van Hohenheim eventually counters Izumi and Sid Curtis, and he's like, oh, it's the guys that you, you know, y'all trained the thing, and the, you know, he's helping.
This is such an odd scene.
This is wild as fuck. It's just, it just is.
It's a it crazy just, fucking scene. Like,
oh, my ribs. And he's like, I'm a doctor, I'll help her out like that. Someone get a car. So he runs to get a car. And then, her husband goes to run and get a car. And Van Hohenheim legitimately, like,
sticks his hand in her stomach. Literally sticks her hand in his stomach.
But it's like a jab. It's like a...
He was like... He was like, you're gonna feel... It was like when you go get your ears pierced, and they be like, oh, you're gonna feel a little pinch. And it's like, you feel this whole... Yeah.
But it wasn't... It seemed more... It felt like a situation where he could have, like, turned on her and looked like he was trying to kill her. And that's when Sid Curtis comes up and Molly whops him across the alley.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh my God,
I feel great. Like, it's like when you get your back cracked, you be like, whoa, oh, you like, damn, I haven't been able to.
And he was like, I rearrange your inside for more optimal blood flow. And I was like, how the fuck did you do that?
I couldn't bring back the organs, but. Right. I can just, you know, I moved them around.
Rearrange your insides. And it was like, listen, we've all been there. He eventually reveals that he is a philosopher's stone in human form, which is nuts. It's nuts to think about, but it is what it is. And you realize he is also the gold thing that they talk about in all the alchemy books, because he ended up in, I think it was Jing. Quite some time ago, and he was the one who helped out a lot of people in that society. So it is what it is. Let's see. So let's move over to Ed versus Kimley. So Scar's group is in the mines, and they continue their journey through the mines because they're heading to this town right outside of Briggs, which also features Ishvalan citizens who may have gotten away from Kimley. Ed stays at Fort Briggs. Major Miles orders his men to get ready for confrontation with Kimley's group. Ed disagrees on the plan to kill Kimley and suggests capturing for interrogation. Miles insists on the necessity of eliminating him, emphasizing the harsh reality of Briggs. He's like, listen, we gotta kill him. Like, I don't know what the fuck you thinking. I don't know if you... They didn't kill him before, and look at what's happening now. Al's revelation. Al gets to the group.
Once again, this is like this moment is Miles brings it up. Also, shout out to Miles. This is
cool guy. Great glasses.
Cool guy. Great.
Reminds you of anybody?
You?
No, I don't have glasses. I was gonna say, Nanami.
Glasses are having a moment, aren't they?
You get a little Nanami vibes. He don't go out like Nanami, but you know, it is what it is.
Anami got murked. He went out absolutely. In such a horrible way for such a cool character.
I don't write the thing. Apparently it's cool and it's all hunky dory, but hey, that's another discussion for another day. Confrontation with Kim Lee.
It was one of those moments though. Once again, you see, and Miles also acknowledges it, is like you see the immaturity or just the youthfulness of Ed and Al. Also, we missed one big thing of Kimberly telling Ed, like, yo, you got three things that you need to do, and one of them is massacre this whole town.
Right. Okay. It's in my notes. I'm flying all over. It's massacre this town.
Kill... It's fine. It's fine, Marco, and it's fine, Scar.
Right. Absolutely. Anyway, it gets to the point where they're like, all right, we got to do something about this Kim Lee character. But Kim Lee is eventually, he's like tipped off. He's like, I can sense the bloodlust that's all around. Like, I know niggas want to kill me. Niggas want to see me dead.
Many men should start playing right here.
I see all the snipers in the building and all the other shit that you got going on. And he creates a mist from the snow to evade all the snipers. And Ed tries to reason with Kim Lee, but he's like, eh. And so Kim Lee sends out his chimeras, leading to this big confrontation, and then Kim Lee uses this thing to create a big explosion, and all the chimeras get buried in the rubble, and Ed gets a whole thing throughout his entire body. He gets a whole, I guess, a beam or some sort of structure. Something pretty much impales him, and he's just there. And it isn't until the two chimeras are like, yo, this kid looks like he's suffering a lot. And they eventually help him out, but he uses a little bit of alchemy to heal himself as well. Let's see. We're flying through this much faster than I thought we would, but hey, fights. Let's talk about everything that happened afterwards, where essentially,
there's two big things that happen here. First, Ed gets completely impaled.
He uses the alchemy to heal himself. Yes,
he uses the alchemy. He uses alchemy to heal himself, which essentially he turns his own body into, he turns his own like body and life energy force into a quote unquote philosopher's stone, mm-hmm. and he uses that to heal himself and to heal his organs and all that, which in return takes a couple years off of his life. But also at the same time, we go to Al, and Al's body is calling out for his soul. And so Al is starting to shut down because obviously the soul and the body need to be one together. Right. And I think like this is such a crazy moment because now not only are you fighting against the military and all these fucking villains, you're now fighting against time where you're like, we need to figure this shit out quickly before, we need to figure this all out quickly before, you know, Al is gone for good.
So from there, they get to the house and they eventually go through all of the notes and they rip it out all the pages. And apparently it makes this big fucking transmutation circle, and it's like, great, but do we need any more circles in the story? And they aren't able to decipher it until one of the pages gets turned over, and they're like, oh my god, yes, we have to turn all the pages over. That's how we find out. And I'm just like, oh god. I didn't like that in terms of like, oh, we just have to turn the pages over. I was like, oh, it shouldn't be this.
I kind of like it because it's like a coin. It's the reverse side. It's the, you know, here's the transmutation circle that they're using to kill everybody to create this ultimate whatever. But then also on the flip side, here is the transmutation circle that offsets the other one.
So is there like two different books on both sides of the page? Like, that's what I'm like, all right. Clearly, both sides of the pages have to be important. Are you choosing even sides of the pages and doing this? Are you choosing odd side of the pages to do this? Like, that's something my brain else is like, I don't get why the other... It's all important, right? I mean, and I guess in a sense it still is. But it's like, I don't know. I just didn't like the whole flipping of the thing.
You felt it was too easy? It was too easy of a solution?
Like stupid. I don't know. Maybe. So Sloth completes the 5-point array around the country, and only those
at imagine Fort having Hood. That job. And also, Sloth is the most boring of the homunculus. Yeah, like he didn't even fight back. I was just like, dang,
Sloth, baby.
He was like, nah, I'm okay.
Hohenheim encounters Pride in that tunnel thing. First of all, you couldn't get me to go under there.
Hell no. What?
It's different.
What?
Because he shows up in Rio, meets all the citizens, eats their food, and then goes discovered Pride under it, and then declares war against Father. And it feels like he's got renewed purpose now with everything that's kind of going on. Let's see. Fort Briggs is
under this is my declaration of war moment.
Absolutely. The forces at Drachma initiate an offense. Well, the forces at Drachma. Let's talk about Drachma for a second. Didn't stand a chance.
Didn't stand a chance at all.
They got run up and got done up.
Kimberly sent them completely off.
Yeah, Kimberly is like, this is the time to attack. And Drachma is like,
where's Kimberly at?
We are Drachma.
They thought they were going to pull up like Kimberly,
where are you? I thought you said they weren't expecting this.
The Briggs handled that shit so crazy too. They like, I don't think they broke a sweat.
Nah,
they sounded the alarm and just wiped them with the floor. And they were just like, all right, that's enough.
Bang, bang, boom. Meanwhile, they all get to the different, they get to the northern town of Aspect, and we see a little betrayal action. Zampano contacts Envy and Wrath. It's like, Dr. Marco's out here. He's chilling. And episode ends, and it's like, oh, shit. There's about to be something going down. So as they're residing in Aspect, Zampano meets with Envy, who disguises himself, and he's like, cut the crap, Zampano. We're here. I'm here to grab Dr. Marco. And Envy reveals himself, but it turns out it's been a trap this entire time. And they're taking advantage. Yeah, they took advantage of how Envy is. They're like, listen, Envy getting done up by the Dr. Marco was not on my bingo card.
Man, where the fuck was Dr. Marco hiding this entire time?
I guess that he could never had. Yeah, I guess he's. I mean, I wouldn't assume. I don't want to say. I guess he's never had to use it because he was very much so imprisoned by the homunculi. But
oh, I would have been pulled this move out. What? When I would have pulled the move out when Lust pulled up to his crib.
Well, maybe he wanted to make sure he had backup because he's not a strong person. He's just a guy who can extract people's philosopher's stones, which seems very, very important.
That's what I'm saying. I feel that's enough power. I don't feel that you need backup to be able.
You might need backup. You might need backup. With that said, so Envy is pretty much done. He's been pretty much he's shrunken down, and now he's this little lizard thing. May leaves the group. They're like, go back to Shingle, little girl. This is not a place for you. You did all that you could. You did everything that you can. Go back. Let's see. Envy's thing. They defeat Envy. Former ally of Greed hides. Oh yeah, the Greed's man's hides under the car to go to Central. That will sure be important at some point. Okay. Last two episodes. How about this? Let's head to the last two episodes of this entire ordeal. Because again, there's a lot that goes on. It's so much to like keep up with, and there's so much like if we go through every little minute detail, we're gonna be here forever because pretty much a lot happens. The final episode is where we see fucking
little girl. She runs off. She goes back to Jing.
Yeah, she goes back to Jing, but also there's something else that happens in this. And we, oh, that this all happens in the final episode, huh? Okay, 43. Olivia Armstrong meets her brother. It's pretty funny. They go to, okay, so eventually Olivier sees reveal. He's like, listen, what are the three? He meets up with Lieutenant General Gardner and says, what are the three rules of being a state alchemist? And one is obey the military. Two is do not create gold. And three is do not create human beings. He says the first two have obvious reasons, but the third rule has a hidden agenda. And they go into the hidden room and Gardner reveals that they have been creating their own army. And it's like, whoa. Wow. Crazy. Also in this episode, they're looking for Azumi Curtis and her husband. Cannot find them. Good on them. I assume that's something that Van Hohenheim did. And yeah, that's kind of how we end here. It's a, the last final part is Al meets, Al has arrived at Rio and Al recognized Rosé upon arriving at the food stand. And she's surprised that Al is traveling again, asks where Ed is. Al states that he isn't here today, teasing Winry about a hint of jealousy when Rosé admits that she missed him. Aw. Winry snaps at Al and Hohenheim returns from washing pots and notices that Al is there. So we get some Al and Hohenheim. We get some secrets revealed about the state alchemist, and they got a whole secret army plan to pretty much revolt against anyone who tries to go against them. And we're heading towards the end of this entire battle. It turns up from here. We've got pretty much 20 episodes left in this thing. We're 2/3 of the way through.
And this final third is like a full-blown sprint.
There's like a lot that goes on because there's a lot of things we have to reveal. There is a lot of battles that have to be had. There are still many homunculi who need to be, I guess, extinguished. And there's some homunculi that may not have really even fully been revealed as of yet. We are in the end game of this entire ordeal. Let's say this. You split this into two more episodes. We'll do 44 through 54 for the next batch. And then we'll do 55 through 64 and kind of end everything here. How's that sound?
I like that. Two more weeks of us on your airwaves.
Absolutely. But a lot of things have been going down. This is nuts. It's crazy. It's only getting weirder and hotter and more things are being revealed, but I feel like we've reached a point now. It's weird. I feel like the story, we haven't reached a point yet where the evil guys are really truly enacting their plan. To be honest, this is going way, you know what? I was going to do a JJK spoiler, but you know, whatever. I won't do it, but
you should do it. Fuck these people.
No. I mean, let's say this, the plan in JJK at the end of season 2 has been, we got to create this thing, because we want to take over the curses are going to take over, but we're trying to create this massive curse thing. And I feel like we're getting to that point here of like, okay, the transmutation circle is finished. The bloodshed has been had in Fort Briggs, which is the last part they needed to have. And that was because of Drakum or whatever the fuck it is, whatever that. So the bloodshed is had and the circle has been created there. A circle of bloodshed has been had there. So they kind of got all the steps they need in order to get to where they want to go. But how do we stop them? And I think that's what we learn in this next batch of episodes. Like, how do we stop this from going on? And there's still stuff with Rory Mustang. There's still stuff with Van Hohenheim. There's still stuff with Ed and Al. And there's still a lot of stuff with Scar that we have to like kind of like figure out. So it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. And yeah, any more thoughts? How do you feel about where we're at in the story?
Once again, it's we're at such a great spot because we have so many things in play right now and so many different players in the game. I love the rotation of characters that they use in terms of, it's always not like, I mean, obviously King Bradley for like the villains and, you know, you have your mainstay, but you got all these little side supporting characters like Kimberly coming in and like the things that Kimberly brings. You got, you know, General Armstrong when you meet her and all the things that she's bringing out to the table for the allied side. So to see all this stuff playing out and seeing how all of it's coming together, especially as they're introducing, you know, you're introducing characters what would be presumably late in the game. You know, there's not many times you introduce a character that has that plays a big role,
right?
Typically late, but they're doing it, and they're doing it in a way though where you're, once again, you're kind of swapping out characters. So now at this moment, there's a few that may have taken a step back, but you got some new people that are stepping in. So you really get a feel of like, okay, this is what they're bringing to the table. This is what they're doing. And it doesn't feel like such overload. I think that sometimes a lot of animes can have so many players in a game at once and you get kind of lost and like, okay, like what is everybody's point and role? I think that like this is a side tangent and probably some slight praise that you're going to be shocked by, but I think that MHA does a really good job of the same thing of having a lot of characters in one scenario at once,
right?
But each character actually
roles, yeah, they play a role.
They all play really different roles, and but they're really defined roles that don't clash or get in the way with each other. I think right. That's what's happening now. Like, you got so many people playing different roles, but they're not clashing and getting in the way of each other. They're doing a great job of complementing each other. I think, once again, the world building that they do here is so amazing, bringing them up to the North and the Briggs. But also, too, you even see how, you know, obviously how they broke up Mustang's team, but even seeing them, how they're communicating with each other of like, hey, man, this is what's popping off on the East. And like, this is what's popping off in the South. It becomes it all just comes together so cohesively and comes together so, you know, well. Yeah, and I love the spot that we're in, and I just love this, you know, where we're stopping and where we're going next, because like I said, after this, it's a sprint. It is a complete sprint to the finish. And the stakes are a little higher now. Especially with Al's, you know, body breaking down and, you know, Ed obviously going through his own thing right now. So they're racing against the clock. They're racing against these villains. There's all these things that are happening, but it doesn't feel, all these things happening don't feel so overwhelming or so like brain breaking to the point where you're like, okay, I really don't understand it. They're able to let certain storylines rest for a bit while others kind of either close up or even take the forefront. But then they're all, you know, they're able to switch a gear to make another storyline pop up. We're in a really good spot right now, Full Metal.
I agree. Of course, thank you guys for tuning in. The Lookout, always on the lookout. You can follow the Lookout. I mean, you know where to follow us. You know where we're at. And if you don't know, search us on Twitter and then you'll figure out. But yeah, definitely we'll be back next week. Got two more weeks of this. Interested to see how this shakes out. Interested to see how this turns out. Listen, this is pretty much our winter anime. So
for sure.
We're enjoying this as much as we can. I've gotten too many requests to watch Ninja Kamui and also Solo Leveling, so I think I'm actually going to do that this week.
Oh, look at you. Adding in more anime to the mix?
I don't really want to, but everyone's been telling me it's good. So I'll tune in and see where it goes. But yeah, until then, guys, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. RIP Akira Toriyama. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
First day of Ramadan. So Ramadan Kareem, Ramadan Mubarak to all my Muslim brothers and sisters out there.
Love it. Appreciate you. Take care, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you.